Blog Talk Radio.
I'm checking my vital signs, on my battle, I'm going to war again. Feeling the rhythm inside of my chest, all I need is just a pen. I know I was born for this. I know I was born for.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to our first ever live radio talk show about security and security industry in Colorado. I do have a couple guest speakers with me tonight. I do have Sean Rogers. He's sergeant of a security company. He has been over 20 years security, and we're going to take his take on how he sees the security industry in Colorado. I also have with us tonight Daniel Gaddis. He's brand new to security, but he has been doing many years security contracts and obtaining contracts with other various companies. And he's here to talk to us about the difficulty we have in Colorado on trying to obtain security contracts for not just my company, but companies in general. You gentlemen, can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Can hear you.
Perfect. Thank you for joining us tonight, gentlemen. How's your night going so far?
Well, things have been going really good.
That is good to hear.
Yeah, having said that, it's been pretty good day so far. So, all in all, pretty good.
That's good to hear. So we're going to start off with you, Daniel, since you're fairly new to security, and I know you've been doing a lot of contract acquisitions throughout your career. And let's talk a little bit, you know, when you're out trying to get contracts for security, how is that working out for you? What kind of barriers are you running into? Talk to us a little about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's kind of an interesting thing. Obviously, you know, I came into this, you know, not long ago. Started, you know, I guess to start off with that, I should probably give my background a little bit. I'm sort of a jack of all trades. I have a lot of experience doing a lot of things. One avenue or one item on my background is experience in business development and sales. And so coming into this, that was kind of, you know, one of the things that I really wanted to, you know, apply my skill set to. And it's been a really interesting thing because, you know, my experience in the security industry is that security companies today are speaking with their clientele, presenting themselves in such a way that they're significantly underpricing their service so that they can minimize their presence, their activity on site. And so what you see is a lowball cost and then an even smaller presence on site so that they can hit multiple sites to increase their revenue.
Yes, I have been seeing that myself as well. I know I went out to a contract a while back trying to get a security contract. No, they just want us to come in and hit a couple times a night. And I gave them a price, and they were, like, appalled by the price we gave them. You know, they were doing, like, $1,200 a month for the company they had. I'm like, that's ridiculous. You know, that's, like, $15 an hour. You can't pay an officer for that amount. There's no way you can run a company like that, you know. And that's kind of the problem that I've been running into. And I'm sure a lot of other security companies have as well. I know you've been in security for a long time, Sean. What have you seen? Have you seen that affected at all? You know, with pay and stuff and these low ballers and stuff like that. What have you seen when you've been out there?
Well, over the years, my 25 years doing this, I have seen a lot of changes. I've seen a lot of different folks out there in the field. And, well, when you're getting the lower pay, when you're trying to keep everything low, overhead and all, I get. But when you don't pay your officers enough, in order to keep their training up and keep them interested in the job. A lot of times their training and everything doesn't work well with them. They will not have the correct training in some cases. And it really bottoms out a lot of their attitudes. And, well, I've seen a lot of that before. And it can be dangerous for the security officer out in the field. When you're going out in groups of multiple, sometimes they kind of hang back because maybe their skills aren't as high or as well used. So when you're cutting under and you're not getting the proper training, yeah, it kind of makes a big difference for the officers out in the field. It almost puts down to it's just a life or death, because if you're not training your guys right, well, yeah, it can be dangerous for everybody.
Yes, I do agree with that. You are correct. Do you think that, from my opinion, being a company owner, I think that seeing that, they're undercutting people, undercutting their pay and stuff for, what they're charging customers to try to get that contract, they're undercutting it. Do you think that's affecting the training for a lot of their employees towards getting the effective training that they really need to do? What are your thoughts on that, Sean?
Well, and, that's a great question, because if they're undercutting, that means they're not bringing in enough money to the company to properly train and pay their employees. A lot of times, and I've worked with folks like this, where, they get out there, they're gung-ho, they're ready to work and everything like that, but they don't have the necessary skills to either de-escalate a situation because maybe that wasn't in the training packet, or if they have to go, God forbid they have to go hands-on for some reason, they may not have had the proper hand-to-hand contact and everything else as far as training. So if you're undercutting, it means that you're cutting money from somewhere else in the company in order to cover your overhead and everything like that. So if a company's charging, $20, $25, $30 an hour and the employee's only getting $8, $9, $10, or, even the minimum wage of $15, $16, it can still play on their viability out in the field. Well, I'm not paid enough for this or something like that. That'll kind of be the mentality. So, if you're just looking for somebody to observe and report, I would still suggest have good training, because you never know when somebody's going to single out that officer that may be sitting there and writing a report to be their next victim. And you definitely want your guys to come home every night to their families. Just like the police officers do, they want to make it home. But it does take the right training, and unfortunately that does take money to do.
Very well said, Sean. Very well said. That is correct. Daniel, what is your take on that? I know you've been in the security industry very long, but I know you've been out there trying to acquire contracts and stuff, and you've been seeing this type of stuff. What's your take on that from what you've seen?
No, I highly agree. To me, and sort of logically, the way that I think about it, it falls completely in line with how these companies are logically approaching this business. If you think about it in terms of that, what they're doing is they're having their security officers drive through a property, not even stop and get out. What kind of danger is the security officer really going to encounter if all they're doing is driving through a property? So in doing that, they can drop their overhead costs on training their security officers, because their intent is just to have to drive through the property. So what exactly do they have to pay for with regard to training? The drawback to that is if there is a security issue when that officer is present and that officer is needed to engage, they're going to be very ill-equipped to do that on the basis of improper and completely inadequate training.
You are correct. I totally agree with that 100%. Training is a big factor, and I know those of us that have been in the security field for a long time, I'm sure, Daniel, I'm sure you've seen it as well, the small time you've been in there. That is the biggest thing that is lacking with our industry is training. Would you not agree with that statement, Sean? Do you have anything to add to that?
Oh, I fully agree. If you get somebody that doesn't have the proper training out there, if something happens where you have, if a suspect or somebody like that comes at them, they're not going to know how to defend themselves or defend I apologize, had a slip here, but they're not going to be able to defend themselves or their partner. If something's going on with their partner or something like that. So definitely training is a huge, huge thing to have, especially the right training.
That is correct. I do agree with that 100%. What's your take on that, Daniel? I mean, do you feel that we are lacking training in that field as well, security industry here in the state of Colorado?
Well, I mean, absolutely. I totally think that, you know, that's, like I said, you know, if these companies know going into any given contract that the majority of the time they're just going to have their security officers drive through a property, they know they can cut down on overhead in reducing the amount of training that they're giving to officers. Now, I don't necessarily know for a fact that that's what's going on, but from my experience watching security officers engage, that's what I have to assume because, you know, my goodness. I mean, I've watched several engagements posted on YouTube of security officers where, I mean, you know, not only is their approach completely unprofessional, their appearance is unprofessional, like everything about what I see screams that these security officers don't know how to be security officers. And really, you know, the other thing that it makes me think is it makes me think that these guys that are doing it are attracted to playing police officer. You know what I mean? And just like a police officer, I mean, for goodness sake, if you're on premises as a security officer, you almost are a police officer. So, you know, if you're the kind of person that wants to play police officer and you're doing security for that reason, chances are high that you're going to, you know, have a chip on your shoulder when you're in the field. Overreach. And you're not going to be adequately prepared to protect and serve the way a police officer should.
Absolutely, you know, absolutely. I agree with that 100%. You know, and I do see, you know, we do see a lot out there, you know, these officers out there being what we like to call in the street rent-a-cops. You know, they're just, they get hired on, they want to play police officer, you know. And yes, you are correct to an extent. You know, we kind of are law enforcement, you know, on that property, but strictly on that property. But there's certain things still we can and can't do, you know, according to law. And they want to try to take it further. And, you know, there's other companies out there. I won't mention any names at this time, but, you know, there's one out there, you know, I mean, there was one a few years ago that, you know, for God's sake, they had their cars armed with a T with firearms. They left their vehicle unlocked and weapons got stolen out of their vehicle. I mean, come on now. You know, your training officer better than that. Your company, the owner, should know better than that. I mean, you know, should get the proper training, you know. This guy's got more money than brains. You know, he's able to run his company, but, I mean, he doesn't know the first thing about running a security company. He just has the money to do it, and it really boggles my mind. I don't know what it is. I think Colorado's still kind of the Wild West because they don't really, one of the few states left that doesn't actually require a security guard license statewide. It's left up to the cities and counties. And it's really a cluster. here in Colorado, you know, and something really needs to be done about that. You know what I mean? What do you think about that, Sean? I know you've been there for a while, so I mean, you know, you've had license with Denver, you've worked in Glendale, a lot of places that require license. A lot of them won't even let you do armed. I know Glendale for a while didn't let you do armed as a security guard. Like you weren't a cop, you're just we call observer protection for you to have a firearm. What's your take on that, Sean?
Well, and I completely agree with what Daniel says. There's a lot of gentlemen that come out, you know, they're gung-ho, they want to get it done. You put a badge on them, tell them they got some power. Not all, but a lot of them allow that power to go to their head. They don't think about their actions or how their actions are going to affect them. Now, them alone, not just them. But when you have guys that are out there, and I've worked with some of these gentlemen that, you know, they get that badge and they're like, you're going to listen to me or else. You know, I've watched guys walk up like that. And a lot of times it doesn't end well. We end up having to write tons of reports because one's ego thought the other's was bigger. So, yes, it's always good to be able to walk up, not as friendly, but just be like, hey, you know, heard this was going on or whatnot. Not putting anybody else so much on defense, but just letting them know, hey, I got a dispatch to the area. Did you see anything? Now, if the people may have been the ones that other people had called on, they're not on defense at this, so they're not already in the mood to attack. And I've seen this happen. I've worked with folks where they would intentionally antagonize people just to be able to use their skills. I didn't quite approve of that, but I was not a senior officer at that time, so I could not say anything about it. But I did take them aside afterwards and go, hey, that was a little much, but being they had more seniority than me at that time, I just kind of got the stink eye. But, yes, the training, the not having a chip on your shoulder, not having a huge ego when you get into uniform, it's going to be a very handy thing because then you as the officer, don't come out thinking, well, these people are going to listen to me just because I got a badge, just because I got a duty belt. You know, you want everybody pretty well on the same playing field. There's sometimes, I admit, that you're not going to come into that situation and you're not going to be able to, hey, I got a dispatch to the area. Do you know about this or have you seen anything? It's going to be directly to those people where you're going to have to walk up and, hey, you know, we got a dispatch call on you guys. Would you mind keeping it down or, you know, would you mind heading inside for a little bit, you know, let things kind of cool down? You know, there's multiple ways to handle it, but you always want to try, if you can, to take the lighter approach unless it absolutely no other way allows you to have to use force. A lot of times if you don't push on them at your mere appearance, a lot of times people are easygoing with you. So that, you know, even though I've got a lot of training with law enforcement and everything like that, I'm just short of my post certification. So if you walk up without setting people on defense, which nowadays I understand is hard, but yeah, if you can try and keep everything at bay and everybody's, you know, agreeing anyway, I feel that is the best way to approach a situation unless it absolutely requires you to be on guard in the area. Always watch your back. Always be situationally aware. Yeah.
Thank you for that, Sean. I totally do agree with that. And no, you are absolutely correct. You know, that happens a lot of the security field. We see it everywhere. And I think, you know, 50% of it is training, you know, 25% of it is pay, and I think 25% is just leadership management for that company that causes that, you know. If we can, you know, make that all three of those a little bit better, I think things would be a lot better for everybody. What do you think? What's your take on that, Daniel? Would you agree with that from what you've seen trying to acquire contracts and stuff?
I would definitely say yes. I mean, you know, training, everything like that. People people that are getting into the security industry got to realize that the world is a dangerous place. So finding security officers asleep in cars, on premises, like, that's, first of all, it's incredibly dangerous, right? If you're in your patrol car and you're on premises and you fall asleep, like, there's a huge, huge, huge red flag there. And, you know, the residents, like, you know, how many residential communities out there are low income, you know, residences that are, you know, have drug activity and stuff like that. You fall asleep on one of those type premises, you might find yourself in a very bad way. So not only is it unprofessional, it puts you in incredible danger when you do that sort of a thing. And so, you know, training, professionalism, all of that, like, it not only is it important from a business standpoint, it's even far more important from a personal security standpoint as well as a residential security standpoint. So yeah, I completely agree.
Absolutely, Daniel. I agree with that 100%, you know. And yeah, well, I think, you know, we got to have our security officers, you know, in this industry to take more pride in themselves, you know, pride in what they do. One of you guys mentioned, you know, earlier about their appearance. You know, we've all seen it. You know, they come in wearing jeans, pants sagging, shirt untucked, wrinkled. Looks like they spilled their lunch on it. You know, they haven't washed it in a week. Yeah, we see it all the time, you know, and that's not professional. That's what our industry is like, unfortunately, and that's why we need to work to change that. And that's part of what this series of radio shows is going to be about, is how we can change things, you know. Something definitely needs to be done about it, you know. Like you said, Daniel, you know, sitting out there in a patrol car, sleeping, you know, especially on a high-risk property, you know, you're asking for trouble. You're asking for trouble for yourself, for the company, everything, you know. And that's just something that shouldn't be done. I mean, I'm sure you have some stories, Sean, that you could probably mention or somebody can mention to us about something like that in your years of law enforcement, or sorry, your years of security while you've been on that field. You can tell us something quickly about the time you had something like that, where you experienced something like that, unprofessionalism like that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there was a gentleman that I wasn't on duty at the time, but I was kind of passing through, and I stopped at this truck stop here in Denver. The guy, he was wearing sandals on his feet instead of proper attire for his job. He had shorts on, he had his duty belt on, had a shirt that said security, and apparently he didn't take enough situational awareness to know that he had a strand of toilet paper sticking off of his sandal. Again, situational awareness would have told him something was following him. You know, in other places, yes, it does come down to the appearance. It comes down to how committed are they to the job, or are they just there for a paycheck? All that factors into how they do their job, how they conduct themselves during their job. I've come across other companies that, yes, I have caught other security officers sleeping in a highly trafficked area, where all somebody would have had to have done is, if they did not like security for some reason or another, thrown a rock through the window and hurt them, they could have shot them. So, yeah, it's very common to find things like this. With other companies I've been with, as we've been patrolling by, their lights would be on, there'd be nobody in the vehicle. They may be inside locking stuff up, I don't know. Which, you know, if they're active and they're doing their job, great, you know. The situational awareness, as they're coming out the door, they'd see other people around. But, yeah, with when you're like completely out of uniform, if you're not really set for your job, if you're not committed to your job, to if you want to call it a career, which is what I've done. I've gone through as much training as I can find, and I'm still looking for more to keep myself current. It's a matter of, again, the professionalism. We cannot hammer that enough, because you're going to find guys out there that they're just not interested in the job. They're doing it for a paycheck. And they're going to have that mentality of, well, I'm only worth this much. I don't have all the proper training. I'm here. You want them to be excited. Hey, I'm out here protecting people. I'm out here doing what I'm supposed to do. I'm going to go home and be able to see my family. My partner, if they have one, will be able to do the same. Yeah, that's the big common factor with a lot of companies is the unprofessionalism, you know. And like you were speaking to the security company that had their equipment stolen out of their vehicle, that, again, comes down to professionalism. You know that wherever you're parking, you've been in the neighborhood for X amount of years. You know it may be a bad neighborhood. You definitely don't want that kind of stuff stolen from your patrol car. So, yeah, it, again, comes down to, am I being paid properly? Do I have the proper training? How professional am I when I step out of my car?
Thank you for that, Sean. You're absolutely correct. It all does come down to professionalism. But that professionalism there, again, I think comes with, you know, pay, training, and, you know, leadership. You know, if your company can't provide those three, then you're not going to have that professionalism. All four of those come hand in hand. Professionalism comes with training, pay, proper pay, and leadership. Do you agree with that, Daniel? What's your take on that? Would you agree with that?
You know, I think Sean's statement can be definitely reflected in some of the applications and some of the resumes that we've reviewed. There have been so many people that have responded to your postings for security officership on Indeed that were people with little to zero background in security. Now, that inherently is not a problem, but you take a look at some of the statements that they put on their resume, and you get an idea real quickly that these people are not applying for a position in security because they're committed to that industry. They're applying because they need money and they're looking for an open opportunity. And, you know, as jobs go out there, security is rather bougie. I mean, you don't sit there and wash dishes. You don't, you know, work your tail end off at the end of a shovel. I mean, you're walking around and you're patrolling. But that doesn't mean that the job is actually all that lucrative. I mean, you've got to be ready when crap hits the fan to respond. You've got to be capable in a highly dangerous, highly charged situation. And a lot of the resumes that we review reflect how much the general populace really takes for granted what all is involved in security, and it clearly shows that these people are not in position to be committed to it.
You are correct, Daniel. Thank you for that. I do appreciate that. We actually are out of time, fellas. I do appreciate your time today. Our next session, we'll discuss more about the security industry and the field and how it's going, and about the new program I'm trying to implement to try to change things here in Colorado. Private Officer International, a new program that I'm trying to implement here. Again, gentlemen, thank you for your time. I appreciate you guys. Gentlemen, enjoy the rest of your night. I look forward to talking to you guys again.